This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Fun Friday. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and it is episode 99. Well, living in a digital era can sometimes feel exhausting. We're told that we need to retrain, pivot, and adapt to new paradigms, whatever that is. But is there real science lying behind these feelings of insecurity and uncertainty? And if there is, could there be a cure? Today on MSP, we explore the chaos. Matt, why are we coming back to chaos and uncertainty this week?
Hey, Jeff, I mean, do you even need to ask that question? You know, regular listeners may remember that uncertainty was a big theme on the show a couple of years ago, that the digital world, while absolutely fantastic in a lot of respects, does require, you know, a really steep learning curve, and also, you know, you also have to be able to cope with that really rapid evolution. So as soon as you feel you've learned new skills or adapted or shifted your mindset to whatever that new status quo is, it's already marching on to somewhere else.
It's strange to talk about a dynamic status quo.
Well, it's even stranger when you realize that you haven't invented the term. Dynamic status quo is a term that exists actually in employment law and relates to collective bargaining agreements.
I hope this isn't what we're talking about today. Some of our listeners are loyal, but I don't think we need to push them to extremes.
No, we're not going to talk about employment law. So dynamic status quo was a term that popped into my head to help describe the world we live in. But obviously a quick Google search showed me that it already exists. But like all good citizens in the dynamic status quo, I'm robbing it and I'm giving it the meaning that I want it to have.
Well, that's just chaos.
Yes, and chaos is the new norm. So before anyone goes off alarming, you know, I'm not talking about chaos in the society collapses sense.
Are you sure?
No, that's going to be next week, episode 100.
No.
I'm going to get my full Armageddon on for that one.
Future Matt.
No, not this time. It will be real me or present me or this me or whatever it is that people think I am.
I don't think they give it too much thought.
And why would they? especially at a time when the status quo can't even sit still.
Okay, yeah. So can you explain that dynamic status quo idea?
Well, when we talk about maintaining the status quo, we talk about keeping things as they currently are. So we get this idea that the status quo is essentially inactive, that it's antithetical to change. But the status quo is and always has been fluid.
When we challenge the status quo?
Yes, because, and linguists are more than welcome to come and correct me here if I'm way off beam. You know, we talk about overthrowing the status quo, but in actual fact, we don't. The status quo actually moves with us and it reforms. We move the goalposts and the status quo shifts, sometimes easily, sometimes uneasily. It shifts to that new position.
So if the status quo is dynamic, why are you wasting our time with your dynamic status quo?
Well, because I think we're either in or on the verge of a new normal where flux and change is the status quo, that our expectation is not that things will stay as they are, but that they will actually change. And we're seeing it all over the place. For example, like Disney taking our favorite shows away from Netflix and launching its own streaming service with all the Marvel shows. We look at deepfakes, we look at fake news, we even look at fake eggs. You know, in a way, you could almost call it the faker's quo.
Is that a nod to imposter syndrome?
Well, yeah, I was chatting with a friend who suggested that imposter syndrome was something we could cover on the show. So I mentioned that the podcast for The Perfection Trap had just come out and it actually overlaps with some of the same area. But for those people who don't know the theory, imposter syndrome is actually pretty self-explanatory. It's the idea that we are all imposters, that we're not qualified or talented enough to be doing what we're doing, and that someone is sure to find us out. It's a little bit controversial in medical circles, namely because some people see it as pseudoscience or pseudo-medicine. And it's also been criticized for being not me syndrome.
Not me syndrome?
No, not you. Not me.
Yes, not you.
Yes, not me.
The more we talk about it, the more confusing it gets.
And that's the essence of not me syndrome. The confusion is one of its defining characteristics. It works for me and not for you. So while anyone can suffer from not me syndrome or imposter syndrome, if that makes it easier, they're more likely to suffer from it if they're not me, an older white male. And as a result, people feel unqualified for the work they do or the role they find themselves in, like being a parent or a billionaire philanthropist.
Really?
No, unlikely. When someone gets to the point where you're willing to play God with your fortune, I think it's probably a foregone conclusion that they are a me and not a you. They are a me and not a you, as witnessed by Bill Gates' comments to US presidential hopeful Elizabeth Warren this week.
Now, can we get back to the status quo?
No, because it's already changed subtly since we started this episode.
Are you trying to give everyone headaches?
Well, someone once told me that migraines are my superpower, and I don't think they meant for me to take it as a compliment, but now I skip around parties like the extracranial artery fairy, leaving a trail of exhaustion and bewilderment in my wake.
You don't get invited to many parties, do you?
Only when they're so loud that no one can hear me talk. No, I know I'm a chaos monkey. I mean, I thrive on change. I thrive on uncertainty. I get weirded out when things stay the same for too long. And that's part of the reason I love my job. Being a consultant, I'm always looking for new challenges and problems to solve. And I know that most people find that process exhausting, but I like a little bit of wobble underfoot. And if I can help some people on the path to stability in the process, then even better, because both sides are getting what they want.
But we're at a point where change is inevitable.
And extremely rapid. And that's why I think that change is this new status quo, that our new normal is this status of flux. I mentioned Disney before, but you know, we see these changes in the workplace, in politics, in culture, in finance. It seems like all the certainty, all the certain bets are off.
Do you think it's a complexity issue?
I mean, that's really hard to say. The world has always been a complex place. You know, there's this tendency to look back across eras and declare that some previous time was a golden age of simplicity. Life in the Stone Age might appear to be simple to us, but if you were on the wrong end of a caveman's club, there were a lot of complex and varied decisions that occurred in order for you to end up lying on the floor with your skull caved in. So maybe it's actually more of a visibility issue.
Disconnection?
I think that's a good way to put it. You know, how many of us truly know how the internet or the World Wide Web works, or how those 4G signals reach your phone, or how those signals somehow make Facebook work? And what is Facebook? I mean, not the UX that we see, that interface, but what is its underlying structure?
We have to take it all on trust.
Yeah, and by and large, our faith is not being rewarded. You know, we have to accept that things like Facebook or Google search engine just are.
And how does this bring us back to uncertainty and imposter syndrome?
Because the world is full of things that we don't and often can't understand. You know, if you've spent years training to be an engineer and decades practicing as one, what happens if I come along and tell you I'm replacing you with artificial intelligence? Mm-hmm. An artificial intelligence that has learned everything there is to know about your profession, that is better and faster at your job than you can ever hope to be, and that the AI learnt all of those things in months or days or hours. So you see the pillars that we base our lives on starting to shift.
But then if we embrace your dynamic status quo, then we should be prepared for these eventualities.
Yes, that's partially true, but that brings me to the slaps-giving example. So this was the unforgettable Thanksgiving holiday episode in the sitcom How I Met Your Mother. Sleazy main character Barney spends the holiday in anticipation of being slapped by Marshall, one of the other lead characters. But it isn't the slap that ruins the day. It's the anticipation and the indeterminate timing of the slap that makes it so awful.
So AI is like an indeterminate slap in the face.
I mean, in this context, yeah, very much. You know, it's one thing to know that you're going to be laid off or downsized in some eventual sense, but to go into work every day for what could be years at a time and expecting that slap to land at any moment is truly awful. You know, it's extremely stressful. And that's why some economists and sociologists have actually put forward the opinion that the expectation of a recession can often be worse than the reality because you're thinking about all the horrible things that might happen. You could lose your house, your car, your savings. Will it get bad enough that you see one of the kids, obviously not one of the good ones, but as a bag of black market organs? You know, whereas the reality of what a recession brings, it may be awful, but it's something concrete. And you can tackle what happens issue by issue.
So essentially, you're saying that we're living in a constant fear of the worst happening.
Yeah, and our lives become this series of short-term bets. Mm. You know, we had this expectation that millennials and digital natives could essentially be taught to embrace this uncertainty. And certainly, I think there has been a lot of adaptation. But what we also see is the buildup of pressure and stress that this faker's quo brings along with it. Mm. We all become imposters in a sense because we know that whatever we're doing is just temporary. We're not going to have longevity. It's not going to have a lasting impact. And at the same time, we want to try and play that position or that reality out for as long as we possibly can. So we try to appear to be perfect.
Do you see this being a long-term trend or something transient?
I mean, that is really kind of an interesting question. You know, one of the things about stress and uncertainty is that word that I keep using today. It's exhausting. Mm. You're trying to maintain impossible standards while that ground is shifting beneath you.
A little wobble underfoot?
Well, I think more than a little wobble. It's a bit like holding onto the handrail of one of those moving walkways while the floor goes in the opposite direction. You know, it's two competing currents. You're going to be dragged one way or the other. The one thing you can't do in that position is stay still. So to address that previous question, yeah, I do think the kind of flux we're seeing now is temporary. But that doesn't mean it's not going to amplify or get worse, or that it will suddenly come to an end. I think eventually we'll see a leveling off. But that's why it's so important that we play a role in defining what that new society looks like, what rules govern it, and where our place is in that society. Because there are a lot of powerful companies and individuals who have their own idea of what that future should be and what it should look like. One where, of course, you may end up as more of a data set than a human being.
All right. When we come back, the signs underlying uncertainty and what we can do to survive the faker's quo. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Beyond frivolous mishmash. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. And before the break, Matt was putting forward his case for a dynamic status quo or a faker's quo, as he calls it. But what is the scientific basis for the uncertainty it brings? And how do we survive it?
Well, I think it's interesting that you say surviving it, because one of the keys to surviving it, as I'll talk more about more later, is that, as I mentioned earlier, the anticipation of that uncertain thing can often be worse than the reality.
That feeling of limbo.
Yeah, because that limbo feeling is a feeling of powerlessness. You can see everything is changing, but there's nothing you can do. And it's actually rooted in the way our brains function. Our brains are predictive devices. They help us to forecast the future and anticipate what's to come. So just the process of walking across a room is forcing your brain to make all those adjustments. You know, is John from accounting suddenly going to shoot backwards and pin you against the back of Cynthia in marketing's chair as you walk between them? So all these incredible and potentially life-threatening and deadly experiences.
All right, I think deadly and office chair is probably stretching reality, but this type of uncertainty is measurable?
Yeah, absolutely. So a study at University College in London recently, and anyone who's interested in this topic, by the way, they can read a New Scientist piece called Worried About the Future by Helen Thompson, which also includes links to articles about the role that things like hallucinations play in our consciousness and all sorts of, you know, really interesting stuff.
And if they don't have a New Scientist subscription?
Then they just have to put up with this show and deal with the uncertainty of not knowing whether I'm telling the truth or not. Mm. Anyway, the UCL study was a fun one because it involved a computer game and electric shocks.
Oh, that's very 007.
Well, unfortunately, they weren't playing domination against Largo, but the concept was very similar. So snakes were hidden behind rocks in the simple game. Mm. And every time the players uncovered a snake, they received a small electric shock. And measurements of the players found that their stress response was, unsurprisingly, much higher when they didn't realize they were about to be shocked.
But our reactions to uncertainty aren't uniform, are they?
No, not at all. And of course, researchers being researchers, you know, and if I was being paid to give people electric shocks, I'd want that research to go on as long as humanly possible. You know, researchers have come up with ways to grade what they term the intolerance of uncertainty, which I find to be a slightly weird way of looking at it, I guess, because something like appetite for uncertainty or tolerance for uncertainty would suggest some people seek it out. So I guess that's probably unlikely. But if you have a high intolerance for uncertainty, then you're probably going to be the kind of person who thinks the worst every time your partner is 10 minutes late getting home, or if no one has liked your Insta post within the first 5 seconds.
Oh, wow. Does that uncertainty give us any benefits?
Well, it can be a bonus in some occupations. So Michel Dugas at Montreal's Concordia University has commented that it may be useful in occupations like surgery or police detection work, where an uncertain outcome is something that you want to avoid. Similarly, you might not want someone who is too laid back or chilled working in air traffic control. But those same traits can be limiting. Researchers found that doctors who are intolerant of uncertainty are less likely to recommend patients try newer therapies or medications. But for the most part, fear of uncertainty is part of our overall evolutionary response mechanism. Uncertain outcomes may be better or worse, but we will often bet on it being worse.
Is this something we can control?
Well, most of us already do to some degree. And I should point out that high levels of intolerance for uncertainty, it's not a medical condition in and of itself, but it is more likely to be present in or accompany conditions like, say, general anxiety disorder. So we naturally demonstrate some of these traits of danger avoidance or what are kind of termed by psychologists as safety behaviors, such as, you know, checking outside the cave door to make sure there isn't a T-Rex lurking outside.
We've gone through this before. Humans and dinosaurs didn't live together.
Yeah, but it would have been so cool if they had done. I mean, snuggling with a cuddly triceratops around an open fire, taking the velociraptors out for a walk, it would have been so much fun.
Would this be the absence of safety behaviors you just mentioned?
Well, I think it's unlikely that caveman Matt would have left many descendants with that kind of attitude. But those same safety behaviors can create negative consequences today. If you're someone who does get anxious in situations you feel you can't control, your responses might be a little out of proportion. And that actually feeds your anxiety and reinforces that sense of uncertainty.
And that's been proven scientifically too.
Yes, a study published in 2008 by the University of Wyoming's psychology department performed a very simple hygiene test. And I can relate to this. So my wife recently suffered from typhoid fever, and I was washing my hands dozens of times a day. In any case, the participants in the test were told to adopt safety behaviors to prevent the spread of germs, such as washing their hands after touching door handles, you know, all that kind of thing. At the end of the week, they overestimated contamination risks, demonstrating that sometimes we fall into the trap of categorizing all uncertainties as being dangerous. We overestimate the risk to ourselves.
And how do our digital lives feed those safety behaviors?
Because access to all information is not necessarily a good thing. You know, as anyone who regularly Googles their headache symptoms knows, you're going to come up with the kind of diseases you would ever, you'd only ever see on the House MD TV show. You know, whereas you probably just need a couple of paracetamol or to drink more water. So we begin to see the safety approach creeping in when there's no need. For example, looking up the number of fatalities at a pedestrian crossing instead of just waiting for the signal and crossing in safety.
If it's evolutionary and we live in a changing world, your fakers quo, shouldn't we just go with it?
Well, we could. That seems to chime with the material we covered in the Perfection Trap episode, where it seems that we're storing up mental health problems for the future. But a tolerance for uncertainty can have benefits with long-term and progressive medical conditions ranging from cancers to Parkinson's disease, partly because those patients are less worried and more able to enjoy the quality of life that they currently have, rather than looking further down the line and forecasting for the worst to happen.
So we've established that moving is the new standing still. How do we change that reflex to better cope with the uncertainty?
Well, there are actually a lot of steps we can take. So for the majority of us, we fall somewhere in the middle of the tolerance to uncertainty scale. Someone who is extremely intolerant might want to seek some external help or counselling. But the key advice seems to be to treat uncertainty like a phobia. So small and gradual steps are the way to win the battle rather than, you know, sink or swim style grand gestures.
So you seek out those safety behaviours.
Yeah, and they can actually be quite insidious. So just in my own instance, a full week after my wife has been out of the hospital, I still feel the need to wash my hands all the time. Not compulsively, but I've gotten into that habit, especially when I touch something that belongs to her, like her phone or a cup or a plate she'd used. So I've gotten into that habit of scrubbing my hands. So now I have to physically remind myself that I can't get any infection from her anymore. So you have to ferret out all of these probably mostly unconscious habits and try to figure out how to reduce or minimize them. In my case, that means putting my wife's dishes in the sink and heading back to the TV without dousing myself in antibacterials.
So we should just be more positive and welcome calamity.
Well, I don't know if we need to go that far. You know, it is a matter of degree. But looking for the positives in a negative outcome can help you to cope with that. So, for example, the idea that I'm flying long haul in economy, that's pretty bad. But there are a bunch of movies that I want to see, so I'm going to spend the time well. So, you know, it's this idea of the silver lining. But there is also value in bracing ourselves for the bad things to come. If AI is going to replace you at work, it's better to have some advance awareness or knowledge of what's coming. That way, not only can you prepare, but you can take steps to retrain or at least learn some new skills or find a job in a more technology-averse company, for example.
But ultimately, we have to embrace a dynamic status quo.
Yes, but that doesn't mean being passive. You know, what do you do with those feelings? How do you channel them? How do you use them to shape the outcomes that you want? That's what I mean about this gradual transition to a flatter status quo. And like I said, I think it will arrive. Obviously, I can't prove it empirically. But when it does, what will that new status quo look like? Will it be dressed in denim and rock all over the world? Or will it be full-on VR, fully immersive, the K-pop equivalent? The K-pop quo. You know, only smarties have the answer.
Anyways, and when we come back, Geek Squawks will be next. That was episode 99, The Faker's Quo. Chaos is the new standing still. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.